Can we face this way, please?
Well, watch what we have this evening.
I just have a question. Just because this has never happened before, when I was coming in, I ran into Sadie in the parking lot. I just had never encountered her out at night before. I didn't know if that was.
Yeah. She is out. It's probably because she didn't know where I am, which would be unusual at this time. She's probably just a little disoriented with that, but thank you for that information, because she can no longer hear cars, of course. So.
Mm-hmm. Or see them, as far as we can tell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm. I have some meditation guiding questions. I recently got some information that I was hitting the bell too loud to begin the meditation, and I was like, what? It was a shock. You know, I thought, I'm hitting the bell perfectly, just right. And the others aren't. It really wasn't. And then what I realized was I was hitting the bell too loud. And I was hitting the bell for all the folks to meditation. Well, the folks are already
You were confused.
I was just exactly. I was confused with the bell out there. So, and then I got really grateful for having that information, and that it just feels so much better now to ring the bell.
Appropriately. I bet for everybody.
Appropriately to everyone sitting there, great. Appropriately to the folks sitting right next to the bell. And so anyway, I still have a few questions. That, you know, time goes on, as that pointed out to me, and I think I have it, you know, and I don't.
Well, I'm always curious about this. Do you hear how other people ring it?
Yeah, but somehow it wasn't, mine sounded like I just wasn't catching the difference.
Mm-hmm. But when you're sitting in the room, not when you're guiding, but when you're sitting in the room, do you hear other people's, the bell?
It feels like it's in all different volumes.
Is that true? Scott's nodding.
Yeah, I'll tell you my experience of ringing the bell is that I've always wondered if it's a depth perception thing. I can't necessarily predict how loud it's going to be. Sometimes I hit it and it's much softer than I intended.
Is it this one?
It's usually more with the rim. Well, no, it can happen for me with that bell too, where I hit it and I realize, ooh. And then you're sort of, shall I hit it again? Or was that? I'm realizing even with the one you've got your hand in that bell, that happens to me sometimes. Even with that one, yes, but I'll ring it. So I do think there's a variation, but I know for me, when I'm ringing it, I have a sense of, like, that would be what I'm going for.
Yeah.
It just doesn't always happen.
So it's about an inch away.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, for me, it's just hanging there.
Yes.
Right? You're not actually...
Right, exactly.
You're not making it.
Giving it more.
You're not trying to hammer.
Yes.
You're just letting the weight of it...
Which has a very different sound than when you bring the striker to it. Yeah.
That one's the harder one.
It is.
Sort of let it just swing like it.
We should have had instruction a long time ago.
For me, with that one.
She would pass it around now. Everybody.
I actually, truly, when I'm ringing that one, 3 or 4 times. Exactly. Yeah. I truly do.
Yeah.
Miss.
Can we strike any of these three bells?
I suppose you could. That one is really intense.
Yeah.
I never used that striker for that. For
yeah.
Either of those two bells.
I don't either. Yeah.
Ooh, that's nice.
It is nice. Yeah.
That's really
nice.
That's very beautiful.
Do you hear that? The other striker makes a different noise with it.
Yeah.
I think.
You can't get it to stop. It just, it's really
Oh, well, no, you're just really good at ringing it.
I think this one has more, with the more padding.
Yeah.
Plus, it's kind of a homely little wabi-sabi thing, isn't it?
Well, and that other striker has some worn-off plates where if you don't get it right, it hits right on the wood, and it doesn't make a nice sound at all. And
this is worn. This needs some electrical tape. I was curious when you said about the depth perception.
Come in the other direction. I've never tried that.
Or even to be very creative.
Do you come from behind?
Mm-hmm. You can decide where you can really.
See, I actually can't see where you're coming from.
I'm sorry. Get you a magnifying glass here. I'm
on the back.
Yeah, coming up.
Yep.
Behind the Balakishas Fara.
So it's more allowing rather than doing with the striker.
And with my. Thank you. That's a lovely setup.
So, so there's more.
Okay.
And then when I come to guide the sit, I tend to come in toward the end after folks have been seated. But if they do come in, when folks are up, still may be some people coming in, I make a show when they enter.
I tend to ignore them.
Okay. So that's what I wanted.
That's my subtle little, you ought to be in here already.
Okay.
So I'm meditating.
Okay.
Leave me alone.
So you would ignore them as they enter.
Yeah, because otherwise you it's true. You know, if you're sitting here like this, you can certainly tell through your, is that peripheral vision when it's in front?
Mm-hmm.
But you can certainly tell that somebody is coming into the room, but you do have to attend to them, to me, and I don't think that's necessary.
Okay,
good.
Okay. And when ringing the bell before I begin the recitation, I try to let the bell have its say before I speak over it.
Yeah, which is, you know, with this one, that's kind of one thing. With this one, that's a lot of bell. And yet, the guidance is to wait until, you know, you might be hearing it, but maybe nobody else in the room is hearing it before you start to speak.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I might argue for this one.
It doesn't have so much resonance.
Yeah.
Oh, that
was so beautiful.
So beautiful.
But I have to say, you... you ringing it makes it. I it took me a long time to become friends with that bell because I would get a thunk because I was doing probably rather than
kind of like that.
Yeah, a little bit like
a baseball
action. Exactly.
Yeah, it's definitely not as pretty when you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful if it's run correctly. So, yeah, and I was tending to not wait. I would wait long for, I mean, I would wait for the big bell to finish speaking. And then the small bell after meditation, I wasn't waiting for it to finish speaking before I started.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever really looked at that before. I don't think we do.
Okay.
Because usually when the bell sounds, people go immediately into gassho.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the recitation probably starts halfway through the bell, or something like that.
Okay. So a couple more things. And then timing the meditation. And this is an area that, I would like some guidance on. I will sit and maybe check the time, and it's like a couple minutes prior to, I just feel like I become
a clock watcher.
And
I can't help you with that.
Okay.
I don't know what. Because you do ring the bell
I just wanted to let you know.
Is she alone in there?
To be a clock watcher?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it's fine all through it, but then when it gets down to it's 2 minutes before, or a minute before, and you get lost in samadhi, and then, you went around it over there, it's now quarter till.
The longest I ever went over was 15 minutes,
So are you serious?
One time I did.
Oh my gosh, I don't remember that time. You're expecting really nothing.
That's what I said when I realized that.
I only followed it with good job. Unless you were sleeping, of course, and then
I'll have to go anyway. And the last question I have is about walking meditation. I talked to you.
Why don't we do it more?
I don't need to. Actually, we haven't. Yeah, we really don't do it much.
Hardly ever.
And, I've been practicing walking like you demonstrated. Where the foot just slides, one foot slides across the floor and then lets go. And we don't leave the back foot up resting.
Put the back foot up and way around for a while.
Put the back foot resting on the toes. And so what I've seen about that is it really does seem to help when I just slide my feet along flat. It seems to bring the focus loosening.
You have to be more grounded to do it.
Exactly. I feel much more grounded, and energy is really much more down in the heart. And I find that when I do that step, it does put me up more in my head. Mm-hmm. And I
have trouble keeping my balance.
Mm-hmm. And I have, But what happens is that it also seems to slow me down a bit. So, the slide. So, when I'm walking in, but other folks in the room aren't doing the slide,
well, they just back there for a while.
Back traffic up,
But you shouldn't.
Okay.
But you shouldn't, because people should be moving at the pace of the person in front of them.
Okay.
Not at their own pace. Mm-hmm. That's the whole point.
Well, but if the person in front of me is doing the toe, they're moving a bit faster than the slide. I can't keep up with them. So,
Well, the thing that you might try to do then is instead of the heel of one, and hopefully nobody will do that awful crane thing anymore, right? But if the heel of this foot is even with the toes of this foot, which is what we're going for,
exactly.
And that's not enough.
Okay.
Go out a little farther.
Yeah. It is a little, it's
trickier.
Yeah, I find it is a trickier and a little harder if you're doing the flat foot thing. Mm-hmm. You can,
And you know, when you're doing the flat foot thing, you know, you can lift it up just slightly if that's,
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so if you've got a crane leading the meditation, that's where it gets really dicey.
Yeah.
It's too bad, because it's actually not walking meditation. It's just something that, I don't know, people, they see somebody do it, and then they think that's the way to do it, or...
Well, I thought that's how we did it. I mean, that's what I thought. That's what I saw, and I thought that's how we did it.
No. We don't.
It's a number of things.
Yeah, exactly. That happens a lot.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate being in a community where people ask those kinds of questions, things that we do every day, three times a day. And I became really aware of how much I have an internal conversation about those things, and this is, again, one of those things that happens everywhere. But it doesn't occur to ask. Or I realize, like, oh, I already know, because I thought the last time we asked that question on how long do we let the bell ring until we speak? I've never heard let the bell speak and then we speak. I mean, that's kind of beautiful, but last thing I heard is when it begins to fade. So that's how.
Which is really, I mean, if the person knows what they're saying when they say that, that's great. But it starts to fade the minute you hit it. So that really is quite long.
But again, one of those things where I think that occurred to me and it didn't, like, well, what does that, I just see the training of not to, it's always something around, like, don't disturb. I mean, you got the answer. Even though, actually, I'm not sure what that means. Because you're ready to fade as soon as you, what I made up in my head was, It seems kind of solid. It does fade right away, but it seems solid for a while, and then there's a place where it seems like it gets quieter, and so that's when I was... But, I mean, boy, just to see where that was operating without just simply asking.
Well, I'm working on that book, you know. I'll be working impatiently this afternoon working on that book. I got very cranky with all of the calls and texts and that sort of thing, as you may have noticed. I got extremely cranky. But that's exactly what I'm working on right now, is that. It's like, what keeps people from talking? It's so, you know, there's all this stuff going on, and there's none of this stuff going on. And all of those messages about, you know, well, you know, you don't need to, I mean, why disturb anybody? You know, they should know anyway, and besides, you do, and so why don't, and the thing that you said that's so interesting about it is the conversation in the head will go on endlessly.
And
I can't believe it rang a bell like that. And we never get tired of that.
Or it could be about me. You know, I can't believe they rang the bell. I can't believe you, you know.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes, it just, it's amazing, actually, on everything and everything. And it's just such the, it's just assumed, like, that's how it is or something.
Well,
it doesn't even get to that level of consciousness.
That's right. But once we catch on to the level of suffering, the amount of suffering that goes on with failure to communicate simple things, we begin to see that it's not an accident. You know, it's not just that we overlook it or we don't think of it, because periodically we would. It's really conditioned mind has a program going. And of course the program is, pay attention to this conversation, do not engage in those conversations, because those conversations tend actually to resolve issues.
Right.
As issues are resolved immediately, they don't tend to linger in here as long, and that's the place to avoid.
Yeah. Because I've been looking at communication, and it was just sobering to see it on something quote so small, it was actually the exact same process. Mm-hmm. And that in general, it kind of goes, you know, it's like, it, you know, swings over to the two dualities of communicate, don't communicate, and both are painted as it won't be good.
Yes.
And
yes.
So then it seems like the agreement, the blackmailing is, and because they both, I don't like how it feels. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll agree to basically go back and forth where it feels less intense. I don't know if that's true.
Well, you're told.
Yeah.
Right, you're told that on here or here it's going to be so intense. But you don't really know that because you just stay with what's going on here.
It's amazing to agree to that. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's a slow death. But I'm believing I won't have to feel these things that I'm told I really don't want to feel.
Well, and I think there's another element. It's a slow death. But I'm in control of it.
Well, that was the other piece that I saw, mm-hmm. was the buy-in is I get to open it up or not open it up. Mm-hmm. And I actually end up not doing either. And so I have control over it.
Yes.
So and even though it feels like a stone in my body or draining my life force, that thing of feeling like I'm deciding whether to let it out or not.
Yes. And, of course, the most difficult part to catch on to is that I is not me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That is just the...
Yeah. That's always it, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
I think it's me. I believe it's me. So I'm gonna go with it. And as you say, when we get to the point of realizing, this is a slow death. So is that really something that I want to buy into? Because maybe the other wouldn't be a death.
Well, that's it. So I was running some of this stuff by the mentor, and we were talking about some specific scenario, and it was like, well, I don't want to say them because, well, what if they did something like that for you? What if they said something and you were doing something like that? Well, I'd be grateful. Because if I'm doing something like that, I want, you know, as was just being said, I want somebody to bring attention to that. Mm-hmm. So I can even like kind of pop out of it on that level. And it's sort of like, it seems like, well, I'm not really afraid of the outside stuff, especially living here. But it's like, well, then it must be what I am quote afraid of what the voices are going to do to me.
Oh yeah.
I don't want to be in that relationship and feel that really bad thing. So I'll agree just to kind of keep it low and don't do either of those things and stay a slave to you, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where you're kept in that place of being made to believe, however you're being made to believe that doing either of those things will be really awful.
Yeah.
And that you're safe when you stay in that small, okay, I'm not going to rock the boat place.
Yeah, even though I have recordings where I did do one of those things, and here was the experience, and we were fine, usually it's actually pretty great.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
Yeah, because people tend to do one of two things. So you're going to give me some information that you've been held in that place. I'm either going to say, oh, thank you, or, oh, yeah, I got that. Neither one of those is a death wall.
Yeah. No, it's what this, yeah. I mean, I don't even know if I actually do it, if it actually really does anything to me. Because it seems like just the doing it solves it all.
It precisely.
So it's just always a...
And the other thing that solves it, as you say, is picking up the recorder and having a conversation with the mentor.
Yeah.
So we got two ways out.
Yeah.
Either just open your mouth and say something, or pick up the recorder and open your mouth and say something. But the two ways out are say something.
Yeah. And just like anything, you have to keep saying something.
Yes.
Because, I mean, that's what's amazing is to have to say something, to have an experience that completely says those voices, that was completely unfounded.
Mm-hmm.
And then be right back into believing the exact same.
Yes. Well, and the other fascinating thing about that to me is the setup for... Okay, you should say something. So, Conditioning has just taken the the megaphone and blurted out something, and then of course the worst happens.
Yeah.
Right? Because and then you just really need to keep your mouth shut, because if you don't, bad things happen.
I've heard that one.
Yeah. Rebecca.
Wow. So all of that y'all are talking about in terms of communicating about other things, or you know, whatever, I see it happening about communicating just what is happening with me, not even about other things that are going on outside of me,
Can you give me an example of how that would look?
Yeah. So I'm in deep trouble here. I think something's going on and I need some help. That, communicating things like that. No can do. And so to look at that process, and it, with your questions of how does that happen? There's all this stuff going on here in the mind, but not a lot coming out here in the mouth. And so what's going on there? And what you said about the marriage of this is me is the number one culprit, I think. Because as long as I don't think it's me, there is the SOS, is the flare going up, because I know it's not me and I need help. Mm-hmm. But if I think it's me, then
you gotta keep it from them.
And because number one, usually they're the problem, in that story.
And they're so close to hearing about it.
Yeah. but number two, even if I do not think they're the problem, and I'm really the problem, then there's a, if I think it's me,
there really is something wrong with you.
Yes, and it's, there's that collusion, because it'll be something humiliating.
Yeah, we've got to keep it a secret.
Yeah. I got to get myself out of this, mm-hmm. so that I'm worthy then to rejoin humanity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the call coming from within the house. I've got to get myself out of this.
Mm-hmm. You know, I at some point, I think we will stumble upon the way to, I don't know whether it's communicate it clearly enough or see it clearly enough or something to make that process of recognizing what is me, mm-hmm. what is authentic human being, and what is ego, mm-hmm. to begin to see the difference in that. Mm-hmm. Because it is, what we're describing, what we're talking about is when you're identified. Mm-hmm. And trying to see I'm identified when I'm identified is really tricky.
It is. It is. And I came across a tool that has been so helpful a few days ago.
Yes.
I'll tell you. You will be very familiar with it.
Oh.
So whenever I was listening, I've been listening to my recording, which is pretty much nonstop, and especially loving it all through the night. And I woke up when an old recording came on that I had recorded your blog from several years ago, that's entitled Time to Drop It. And in it, you lay out, and I was up in the middle of the night writing these down, because you lay out the list, and then I put it on a poster, and it's really big up on my wall. You are identified if you are, and you, in a conversation in your head, trying to conceal something, being right, making someone else wrong, you lay out a list of about 10 titles of the shenanigans that go on in the head, and then you lay out the list of, and if you are paying attention, noticing, observing, you know, you lay out the list, then you're probably not identified. And then you lay out, then the third category is, so no, noodling, wondering,
figuring it out,
hesitating, second guessing, I can't remember what else is on that list. Anyway, I just have those in there, and they're right where I see them all the time. I have to go back in one that's darker because I can't see it from my bed. But you know, it's like the poster is so helpful to see it, because God knows when that recording is going to come back around. You know, I can't losing these great ones. But when you slap it up on the wall, you've got it. Mm-hmm. And so, getting back to your point about identifying to really identify what's ego and what's the human. I don't know about that, but when I can identify the process I am in.
And can you do that when you're identified? Because I would guess that if I were identified, I wouldn't even see the poster.
Well,
I'd be so busy, you know, talking to myself inside my head that...
Well, you're right. What I'm hoping is that it's going to be the preventative element that will at least delay the next deep identification, because you know, you're right. I had a poster, and you know, we talked recently, you know, in this deep identification, and you said, get it up on the wall, and I said, Sherry, I'm looking at it. It's on the wall.
That was a disappointing moment. I thought that was going to be the solution.
But you know what I realized is a day or 2 days before that conversation, I had gone up to that poster and had started taking it off the wall, and I didn't. And I put it back on the wall.
Wow. A moment of grace.
A moment of grace. Because I remember thinking, why am I taking this down? And then I just put it right back up.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that is something. Because I thought, well, you know, you put something across your door.
Yeah.
And you can't take it down until you've read the poster.
Yeah.
But then we would just take it down, leave it down there, never put it back up again. I mean, it's just fiendish in its ability to thwart us.
Well, and... fiendish in its ability, and here's the creepiest thing, is I can even remember having read it in those days that I know I was in the deep identification. You know, that kind of thing. It really is chilling.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those where if we can remember it, it really inspires us not to be terribly judgmental about anybody, because when we know we can go to those kinds of places, we're really trying not to. What most people be capable of who aren't even trying.
It is so humbling. And one last thing about all that in this. So when I was recording after coming out of the identification, it took a long time to get out, longer than normal in those circumstances to get out of it, which again was very disturbing. Like, what if I had died in that place? That's sort of what was kind of.
Well, that is a disidentifying thought, isn't it?
What if I had died? And I was so gone. But anyway, with the thing the mentor said emphatically on the recorder, because of these things that we're seeing that's just so disturbing, is you need Sangha. You need Sangha. You know, because at that moment, I did not see any other way You know, that any other hand that would have snatched me out of it.
It is the kind of place where, when people commit suicide. You know, if along with that, I mean, there's deep identification and it's just whatever is going on and gone in that way. But if you could find that level of gone with a despair, then in that same way, there's just no way out of it.
Yes, and especially knowing what we know, you know, because I remember somebody who it didn't go well for that we used to know in Sangha that said, I know I'm loved, but I can't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I say,
well, and with that very thing, the encouragement, come to the monastery. You need to come to the monastery now.
Yes.
And a refusal to do it.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, then I'm doubly grateful for the mentor yelling at me, you need Sangha, because that's what it was saying. That's what was saying. It literally is the lifesaver.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So I was just, in that conversation, I was looking at a physical workshop that I've been in, itching, and it's...
May I?
Yes.
Isn't it interesting that that's going on the heels of your being so allergic to poison oak?
On the heels of?
Well, I mean, to go through a period of time in your life of being so allergic to poison oak...
Yeah.
Learning how not to get poison oak like that any longer.
Yeah.
And the itching goes on even without the condition.
Yeah. I cannot tell you.
I think we should take you to Stanford and you should be studying. I think you're a test case for it.
Well, I swear, during the New Year's retreat, I was reporting about it and I was like, oh my, I'm going to write a book. Because the spiritual application is deep. So it happened like this, like several years back. I can't remember how long it lasted, but it lasts. It endures. And it's
months.
Incredibly intense.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that you can't scratch. And I remember talking about this at the time, which is just making it even that much more significant. But so... Like last night, perfect example. Feels like it's getting better. You know, there are times where, you know, I have an itch and I just scratch it and it goes away. So I'm sure it's getting better, right? So I have an itch on my leg yesterday and I scratch it and just covered. Just like intense. And what I've seen in that is what we're up against in terms of don't scratch it,
mm-hmm.
ever,
mm-hmm.
ever. And what I watch is, like right now, I would say about 15 minutes of the day, every day, is very, very intense. The rest of the day isn't. But the urge to scratch it is so strong and so... and makes it a million times worse, and makes it last much, much longer. And
not even if you mean the urge to scratch it, not or if you do
if you scratch it.
Oh, if you do scratch it, you're...
If you don't scratch it, it's going to pass in a relatively short period of time. Really pass. But the thing is, it's going to come back again, and it goes like this. You know, I'm doing this up and down hand motion, right? And I just. As I was reporting about it during the New Year's retreat, I was like, it's exactly like the conversation in the head and suffering, in the sense that if I don't ever give it an inch, ever, it's not that it doesn't flare up, it just flares up for a relatively short period of time, and then it passes, But the addiction, the call to scratch it. Mm-hmm. Because that scratch, of course, I need, it's like the relief is so huge for just that moment.
Do you remember us talking about this in terms of self-hate? The thing that makes it so compelling is that it feels really good and feels really bad at the same time.
That's exactly. I seriously was like, maybe this is why I've been given this. And the thing about it, Sherry, is that I literally think it was 3 years ago, because again, it was after, right after a trip from Africa. And I saw so much about it, and I talked about it so much in group, and it was just that sense of like, I get it, I can't scratch, right? So it sort of was, you know, I'm not going to scratch, right? And then that goes away, and I forget, completely forget. Mm-hmm. And then it roars back, and it's like learning the lesson all over again, except that what I realize, of course, is I'm not starting at ground zero. All of what I learned 3 years ago in it is there, but it's I'm learning it at a deeper and deeper level. And it feels like that exact same thing with self-hate, is that it's like I have to prove it to myself. You know that thing that you talk about, is people seem to need to have their own experience. I have
over
to
and over
and over, and to have it be so bad that it's so compelling not to go there. Mm-hmm. And I can't go there ever at all for any reason.
And it really makes a case for being able to direct attention.
Exactly.
Because if you're not truly there and you're not able to direct attention, you're in a world of hurt.
Truly. In fact, at one point I was Googling just about, you know, the itching and all the other things to see, you know, and one of the things it said, I forget how it phrased it, but basically it was like, get your mind off of it, was one of the treatments that was listed in the thing. You know, just that, don't dwell on it. And that's one of the things that's actually one of those places where I've heard you talk before about where physical fitness pays off in really direct ways and where practice pays off. It's one of those places, because I realize the ability to not go to a story in it is so critical. Mm-hmm. It's so, to just be there and just itch. Just itch. And just...
You know, the one that it occurs to me to compare it to is something like restless leg syndrome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. When it's just so intense, you think you're just going to lose your mind.
Yeah.
And there's no escape from it. There's nothing to do for
and
it.
You're in the middle seat of the airplane on the 16-hour
And to be able to just sit still through it.
Yeah.
Or a panic attack.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's another place where...
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so it does, it just is one of those places of, you know, I was in that last conversation, I always go to Jesus and the barcode. You know, that place of being identified, realizing we're identified, and that place of, you know, it's so intense, and at the same time, seeing the huge benefit of it, and receiving the benefit of it, mm-hmm. kind of having both of those things happen simultaneously.
Not even flashing back and forth, but being able to see them at the same time.
I wanted to look at something a little bit. Last Sunday, I picked up the recorder to listen to an excerpt from a radio show, and as I picked it up, I just had this thought that I think there's something here for me. I'm going to hear something that I need to hear right now. And it just started right when you were talking about the whole point of awareness practice is breaking through stuck places in the body, the mind, the emotions, and just bringing attention to it. And I talked about it a bit in group. And I'll be darned. The next day, someone told me a story. It was a tragic experience of a young woman. And even though the content was different, I could relate to the process, and it just felt like one of those stuck places got revealed to me in a very big way, something that I'd just been holding on to for many, many years. I just felt kind of a little bit, you know, just paid attention to the sensations. And let's see what I want to say about it. First of all, I feel immensely grateful that it just felt like something was directing my attention toward this outcome. I don't know. I just felt
You were feeling guided.
Guided, just really guided step by step.
Because there was this stuck place, and you didn't know it was a stuck place. It had been in there for all that time. You didn't know it was in there.
And I didn't. And it had really been. It had been really stuck. It had really been affecting a whole lot of things about, you know, my beliefs about me, and just shame, and you know, just unworthiness, and you know, just some actions that were taken as a young person that, you know, was the best I could do in the situation for sure. But it had an effect on many lives. So that's the place right now, just I think, you know, it's healthy. It wants to slip in there, I think, a bit, and to went through some regret or, you know, feeling bad about it.
That is, right?
Exactly. I mean, the good thing is, it just feels like an answered prayer to just, like, yes, you know, I want to see all that stuff.
You want to see it.
Yeah.
Right? Want to see it. So, I mean, that's fascinating, isn't it, that there's something that's been in there for, sounds like, many, many years. You didn't know that it was in there, but it was affecting all these things. It was holding in place all these things about you, and you had no idea that that's what was holding it together.
Yeah.
And now you get to see that.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, on top of that, there's somebody there who can actually help, assist, mentor, embrace, accept somebody who long ago didn't have anybody there to help her make better choices for herself.
I just thought, like, oh my God, you know, there was just no one for her to turn to, absolutely no one. You know, except and getting very bad advice, you know, that just was the truth.
Oh, right.
You know,
until you know that's going on, I mean, the whole world thinks that what goes inside their head is them thinking.
Yeah.
Really smart people believe that.
Yeah.
So you can't blame somebody who's never considered such a concept for thinking that that's true.
Yeah, just really understanding, really understanding her, what she lost at that point, you know, that she couldn't face it then, or, you know, she just couldn't see, and just really getting the, you know, the magnitude of that and what the impact it had for her, so.
Well, for her,
and
for you.
And for me, yeah.
I mean, this is a chance to let you both off the hook, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because if what happened then has been holding all of that in place in your life.
Yeah, that's a place that, that she's been, this place is kind of tricky, and she's been taken, she's been kind of taking the rap for it,
She's the problem.
She's the problem, mm-hmm. that she messed up, and,
Wow, and it's so easy to see egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate in that, isn't it? So somebody did something happened to somebody, and this ego comes in to identify that person as at fault, and then just holds them there through a lifetime, and through that process controls you. Because you are her. She is you.
Yeah, right.
So you never outgrew it. You never...
Yeah. It just makes so much sense about this kind of withdrawing. Just withdrawing from people a lot.
But you said unworthy.
Unworthy, just not wanting to be... just really unworthy of love. Unworthy of connection. Mm-hmm. To just understand how that got put there. Mm-hmm. Mm. So, it's good. Yeah, it's really amazing, actually.
That's a. I can't remember where we were talking about this recently, but that belief that we're given. That to go back to these places would be just so painful and horrible that we just can't stand it. But painful and horrible and can't stand it is what happens to us when we aren't allowed.
Yeah.
Don't get to go back to those places. So as soon as something like that is revealed, now you've got something to work with. Now from where you are in your life, you can see that person, she was doing the best she could.
Right.
You don't want to judge her. You don't want her to feel bad or feel unworthy or unlovable because of life circumstances that she had no control over.
Yeah, really, definitely not.
Or a new relationship.
What?
A new relationship.
A new relationship, really, and it upped my compassion. It's just so interesting. It's been that came on the heels of healing the relationship with my mom. Mm. I have a relationship with my mom I can never imagine I could ever have. Mm. That I just really just feel love for her. Mm-hmm. That was just never there. And then that happened, and then this, and then that was followed by this.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how it works, but it sounds like kind of piled on. Something happens, and then something gets piled on that, piled on that, and now you're
the piler.
Yeah, you're
unpiling.
And to see what you suspect is real connections between those things.
Yeah,
that you couldn't access that until you had resolved the issue with your mother and opened your heart to her, and then that opens your heart to the next thing that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which I just want to ask briefly about that with my mom. After I had a breakthrough with my mom, and I actually sat down and had tea with her. And we talked. We talked about all those things I could never talk to her about. Mm. And she was really, she was the mom I always wanted. then the voice comes in and goes, okay, so you can't keep having tea with your dead mom. but it's...
Did it say why?
It's not normal. No. Which is, I don't want to be normal. I don't even know why. Yeah, it's okay to have tea with my mom.
Oh, yeah. I think so, don't you?
Yeah.
And with this new person.
And I'm just going to say,
maybe it's the three of you could probably have tea together.
Because
vintage.
Exactly.
I have to get more. I have to get really busy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I was having a sit down with Gandhi the other night in my hometown after we sent me.
And you had that little time, but fortunately he's it folds up nicely, so
there's nothing to do. I get down and sit on the floor with him, or do I stay in my chair on your chair?
Yeah, and instinctively, intuitively, you knew get on the floor, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm gonna have him round. I was just hearing in that, and I might come back to that, actually, at some point, I was just hearing trusting the process, and I was having an experience today where I was kind of not in an experience of trusting the process, I'll just tell you what was going on. So, last night I had this experience that got some adrenaline going, and
I have to ask about that.
Sure.
Did anybody else hear gunshots last night?
Yes.
Did they sound close to you?
Well, I've never heard them. Yeah, they seem relatively close, and I've never heard them that late and dark. I mean,
that's what we talked about. That late and that dark, and I realized. Did you hear them?
Yeah, I thought they sounded like they're coming from here.
They were coming farther out west, I guess. And at some point, I was telling Anna, I was doing something, so I didn't really stop and focus on the awareness. But it went through. It sounds like New Year's. I mean, it sounded like tons of people firing big weapons at the same time.
I've heard gunshots a lot in the last couple of weeks, it seems like. Three or four times.
Late at night or
no,
just during the day? And there's
something in that direction. Oh, I hear something.
Okay. See, it sounds to me when I hear it like it's coming, well, I guess it is, off to that side of Jim and Becky. So I guess so. Anna was hearing it like it's on the other side of that draw.
Like by Meadow Hermitage?
This is an airplane here.
Down.
So down that way, but not out towards Scott so much as almost up that draw on the other side of the duplex.
Yeah.
But if Scott was hearing it, then.
Well, I heard that too, on the upside and the other side of the duplex, but last night felt like west of me.
Oh, okay.
It sounds to me like it comes away from the west.
Okay. So. We all heard it. We were curious.
Well, I realized that I wasn't feeling super well, so I had gotten in bed, but I realized it incorporated into my, now that you're saying that, I was falling asleep, and I was hearing that.
I heard it up until probably 9:30, something like that, as I was falling asleep, and then I talked to Anna at 10:30. And it apparently just stopped then. Go ahead.
So some adrenaline as I was down there hearing that, and aware of fear stories starting, and aware that there were fear stories, so sort of seeing it, not seeing through it. And I just realized today there was just a ton of self-hate around, and I realized that often goes with that, some adrenaline, fear stories, self-hate. Like this feeling of, somebody's going to yell at me today for having that experience of fear. So it's like awareness of a stuck place, but just sticking with it with a hook. Because today it felt a bit like I was sort of surviving that self-hate. I noticed just this evening, I was in the kitchen and there was another person there, I was feeling a kind of like reactiveness or like a sort of almost like that identified snarkiness. So there was a sort of a judgment and that, and I was like, oh, I think I might be
all part of that same process.
Well, right, that I've been so attacked all day that I could feel the effect of that, so I just sort of sat down and...
Let me ask you this. Have the last couple of days been strange? Mm-hmm. Do you know Tuesday night, on Open Air, Jill was on there talking about walking out the streets of Manhattan screaming obscenities into her recorder. I had that day. I didn't scream obscenities in my recorder, but I could have. It just felt just off or something. Now, yesterday, for me, was okay. Today, oh my God, it was like it was some kind of a plot. One of those, everything that Kangol Mom does, you know, pick it up, drop it, spill it, trip over it, computer gets stuck, can't get the, you know. So I thought, well, maybe there's something going on in the universe. People are nodding.
I know that big time. And yes, in both in this life, but also I even emailed this morning, I think this is jinx. Is Mercury retrograde? Or
not? That's what I said. Surely Mercury can't be retrograde again.
Yeah.
But I wonder, you know, maybe they're armed out there and they're having that kind of day.
Oh, yikes. Ooh, yikes.
Anyway.
Don't worry about us down here.
It sounded like in intervals of 4 or 5 minutes, and then we just going for it.
Yeah.
Getting closer.
Well, it took for me just part of the weirdness of everything that was going on. Because it is really, I mean, people just don't go out and shoot rifles at night.
Don't they? But I feel like we've always, like, during, isn't there deer hunting or something hunting that happens at night?
Oh,
I feel like I've always heard it.
Two things have occurred to me that it could be. One is that perhaps periodically the police departments, the sheriffs,
do some sort of practice of some kind. I wondered about that. I thought, I hope the shooting range hasn't opened up next to us. The police and the sheriff. No,
we're
down at Dalton.
And
the other thing is, we are surrounded by farmers with guns who might just get sort of wild and crazy every now and then.
Well, we
farmers of a sort
lost all of us up the road, lost power a couple of days, Tuesday, was it? And so June and I walked up the road to see where the lines were down and that sort of thing, and ran into two fellows from PG&E out there assessing it. And the one fellow said, well, we knew what it was last night, but so many of these lines run out across fields here. And he said, you know, we just don't go out at night anymore because of the pot farms. So before, they would have gone out at night and tried to find the down lines and fix them, but he said it's just not safe to go out there and walk around at night.
Because the pot farms are guarded?
Yeah, because they're armed. Yeah, they're afraid of being shot.
Wow.
I'm glad we have 320 acres.
Yeah.
And a few more up the hill.
Right.
Well, this has been...
I actually have a question along the lines of how we started. So, I'm under the impression that the bell rings and then we let it tone, and that's when we say the first line of the daily recollection. But often, I find I'm like 3 words into the daily recollection, or into that line, and with the daily recollection, the next line starts. But
you mean the silent one?
Yeah, the silent one.
Oh. I always say the silent one when I'm sitting there before the whole thing starts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because if we wait for the tone to really kind of become lighter, there is time to say.
There would be time, yeah.
But sometimes I just find people start at different places after hearing the bell. And so sometimes I'm just starting to say the line. So I started to say it beforehand, but then I also started when the bell starts.
Uh-huh.
And often I just find.
So that's kind of a good time.
I actually do that.
Yeah. Do you? Oh, okay.
I say it to myself as the bell is fading. Mm-hmm. I'm saying.
Oh. Thank you for that. There's a tip. Yeah.
My experience of having the first bell be loud, I like it. It feels like, here we are. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like a beautiful greeting. Mm-hmm. I like it loud. It just sets me on my way. I like it soft, but I also really like it loud.
Well, there will probably be enough accidents that you'll have that loud periodically as we practice. It's good to like it however it is.
Since you have a full insight, you know, about the pot farms. I don't know how popular they are right now, you know, because they're now illegal in the county. But we Google Earth and we found that there's 6 or 7 or 8 right around here. And when they first moved in, there were water trucks and it was awful. And people were driving by really fast and not waving or anything like that. But my sense is over time that they actually have sort of become neighbors. The water trucks have stopped, there are still people who drive too fast and don't wave. But I had this interesting experience of, it was a scary experience of last fall I was driving down French Gulch, and you know, it was a real narrow part with those blind hills, and there was a new mail truck driver who came over one of those blind hills. Right in front of me, in the middle of the road, and so I went completely off the road in the truck, and the mail truck went on. So there I was, and I got out, and I was starting to call AAA or somebody, and one of those neighbors stopped and said, "I'll sit here at the top of the hill, make sure traffic doesn't knows that you're there." He waited the entire time. Mm-hmm. Finally, AAA couldn't come just then. Finally, a trees ink truck was going by, and he stopped him and said, "Do you have a rope?" And they said, "Yeah." And he said, "Okay." And he roped my truck, and he pulled me out. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even know who he was, but he knew I was a neighbor.
Huh.
And so there, so
what was he driving?
He was driving a little red SUV. And there's a couple people like that who know who we are, always wave. Mm-hmm. And I actually feel kind of protected by those guys. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. I just had this experience. I was very offended. But I've come to feel like there really is a sense that for some of those people, this is their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And there actually is some real caring about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, and in a couple of occasions, have been very good neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, well, and you know, it could be they don't have to be pot growers to be nervous about somebody walking around in their yard at night.
Yeah. I think a lot of them are pot growers, because I've never seen them before.
But I mean, you wouldn't have to be.
No.
If some guy walked up to my house in the pitch black dark at night, that'd make me nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably wouldn't shoot you, but.
That's pretty good.
your gun in prison?
Was that good?
Yeah, the bang.
Bang!
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was scary.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily assume PG&E if there is.
No, I would not assume PG&E. Yeah. There's a dark and rainy night, you know, and the power is out. All right. Thank you very much.